Let's go ahead and take our Bibles and turn to Proverbs chapter 1, if you would, please. Proverbs chapter 1. Our focus this summer is in the book of Proverbs, and we'll be hitting a good portion of the first 9 chapters, and then kind of skipping the rock over the second half of the book, if you will, actually 2/3, chapters 10 through 31. Comprise the second part of the book. When we think of Proverbs, that's more in the format that we normally think of a proverb or a proverbial saying. But the foundation for all of these proverbs are laid in the first 9 chapters. And we looked last week at just the introduction, verses 1 through 7. We're going to finish out the first chapter this morning, Proverbs 1. We begin reading in verse 8 down through the end of the chapter. Proverbs 1, beginning in verse 8, the Bible says, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. For they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us,' let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us. We'll all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. Wisdom cries aloud in the street. In the market she raises her voice. At the head of the noisy streets she cries out. At the entrance of the city gates she speaks. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? If you turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make my words known to you, because I have called, you refuse to listen, have stretched out my hand and no one has heeded, because you have ignored all my counsel and would have none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror strikes you, when terror strikes you like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. Then they will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, would have none of my counsel and despised all my proof. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their way and have their fill of their own devices. For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them. But whoever listens to me will dwell secure and will be at ease without dread of disaster." This morning we're going to be looking at the title of the message entitled Wisdom's Warning. I'd like, as we begin this morning, if you'd imagine with me two scenes. The first is a young adult sitting on the edge of her bed wondering how she's got to this place in life. She sits alone. She's hurt. She's sick. She's dying. She's by herself. She's wondering, where did I go wrong? What steps did I take? How did I get here? The tears stream down her face as she thinks back over a short life poorly lived. Scene number two, I want you to imagine, if you would, another adult, this time in the prime of life. She stares off into space wondering how she could have avoided the events that have overwhelmed her and reduced her to this condition. Both of these scenarios reveal to us people that are broken. The first is broken by chasing life down the wrong path. The second is broken by being chased down by life in a path that could not be escaped. But here's what I want you to imagine this morning, if you would. I want you to imagine that this is you. I want you to imagine that you are the life that is broken. This is important. This is important for the book of Proverbs because, especially as we remember Proverbs' message, you need wisdom to skillfully navigate the crooked paths of a broken world. And what a broken world does is a broken world breaks. A broken world breaks those who live in it. Whether it's by chasing down that wrong path or being chased down by life itself, this world breaks. And so we need to pursue wisdom to navigate these crooked paths in this broken world. As we come to this opening lecture in Proverbs, we're going to find two voices. One, we find the voice of a father, a loving father, as he warns about the ways of the streets. He's talking about the gangs, the graffiti, the drugs, the alcohol, the sex, the violence, the guns. He's sitting his son down and he's having a heart-to-heart with him. And he says, "Son, I love you, but I want you to understand how life works. I want to give you some street smarts. These aren't people who are fictional. These are where life is lived and where you as an adult will live life." The second voice comes with a whirlwind. She speaks of destruction in her path, but only if you avoid her instruction. The second voice is wisdom. Lady Wisdom. And she starts by giving her warning in the midst of the streets. The father warns of the ways of the streets. Lady Wisdom warns from the midst of the streets. There are two voices. Two voices that have a single message. Their message is this, and it sits appropriately at the very front of the book of Proverbs. Their message is, it's far easier than you think for real life to take you where you never thought you'd be, where you never thought you'd find yourself. If you're over 25 this morning, look back on your life. Did you think that you'd be today where you are today? Did you think you'd get there by the paths that you've taken? Answer, probably not. This isn't what I planned. This isn't how I thought it was going to look. It's better than I thought. It's worse than I thought. But I can guarantee it's different than you thought. The message that both Father and Wisdom, and throughout the book of Proverbs, the two voices kind of melt into one. They agree with each other. They reinforce what each other teaches. The parents within the book of Proverbs are idealized parents. This isn't a specific real conversation. It's an ideal conversation that's meant to be had in every household throughout the nation of Israel. Every household informed by the Word of God, in the fear of God, for the glory of God, these are the conversations that must be taking place. But not just for Old Testament Israel. These are the conversations, my friend, that have to happen in our homes, among us as husbands and wives, among us as parents and children, among us as brothers and sisters. Because it's far easier than we think for real life to take us to places we never thought we'd find ourselves. It does it in ways that we would never expect. As we come this morning to this passage of Scripture in particular, what we see in this introductory passage to the entire book of Proverbs, these two voices that speak, they start out with a warning. And this wisdom warning issues two dangers. One, the danger of being destroyed by conformity to folly. The other, the danger of being destroyed by complacency, the complacency of folly. These two warnings stand at the very head of this book, and they shape everything else that happens within it. Very simple outline for us this morning. The first danger is that of being destroyed by conformity. This is the Father's voice. Verse 8, he starts out his instruction. He says, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Forsake not your mother's teaching." He addresses
the Son. One of the things that's important for us to keep in mind as we work through the book of Proverbs is that the male gender is important for the message. This is written to sons, but it's meant to be overheard by every person within the faith community. It's written to young men is the idea. Those who are looking forward to a future. Those who are looking forward to leadership in the very near future. Those upon whose shoulders rests the direction, not only of their homes, but also of the nation. And so as this wisdom word is being issued to another generation, it's issued to the sons, but it's meant to be overheard by daughters, by mothers, by men, by women, by every age and every gender, but it's directed to the sons, and it's important because, as is personified very quickly in the book, Lady Wisdom is street smart. And she's going to whisper in the ears of this young man, come follow me. In fact, there's going to be almost sexual intonations of the intimacy that she invites them to. Come, live in my house, eat of my food, have a relationship of intimacy with me, and it will change your destiny forever. Lady Folly offers the same invitation. Explicit sexual intonations in her issuing of this invitation. It's an illicit invitation that reduces a man to eating bread, which in his mouth turns to gravel, which strips him of all dignity, of all honor, and reduces him not only to rags, but to death. This young man playing the streets with women who are actively pursuing him, that's the picture of wisdom and the consequences of life and death. Not by chance does this book end with chapter 31, the wise woman who is made to be the young man's wife. Okay. All of this is put together into flesh and blood. It's idealized in a young man, but understand that this is the intimacy that is issued to men, women, boys, girls, and that pretty much covers it. And so it's important for us to understand how the gender works in here. It's written this way on purpose, and we're not going to strip it of its gender roles because that itself is a part of the message that it speaks. So the father turns to the son, and he's having one of these big conversations that only a dad can have with his son. He's having the talk, if you will. He sits him down on the edge of the bed, and he says, okay, son, pats him on the knee. Let's talk about life, because this is the way life works. He opens with a statement of blessing, a statement of purpose. The purpose is to bless his son. As awkward as these moments are, he says, son, I want you to listen to me. He gives him two commands. I want you to hear what I'm saying, and I want you to not forsake what we're telling you. Hear has the idea of not just listening. You find yourself in that mode when you come home from work. Your mind is in a different direction. You've been busy all day, and you sit down at the table, and three different voices are talking at once, and you hear without hearing, because everybody's saying something and you're trying to follow one, and then you hear another, and it's so you just eat your broccoli. So he says, listen, don't hear as in hearing noise. I want you to hear as in this message has to change the way you think, because this message has to change the way you live. He reinforces it, the way the parallelism works in the Hebrew, hear, which means do not forsake. Don't walk away from it. Don't leave it on a shelf. Don't hear it and think it's done. Hear it and let it change you. The idea of both of these imply obedience. Hear so you can follow. Hear so you can heed. The instruction is to be acted upon. The two contexts of this instruction come from the father and comes from the mother. The father's instruction. The idea and the word instruction is the idea of discipline. The idea is training through experience. He's the coach. He's the dad. It's appropriate that this word goes with dad. Okay? He's the one that doesn't mind the young man getting a few bumps and bruises. When the kid falls on his face, he doesn't run over and pick him up and kiss it. He says, get up and stop crying. What did you learn? Now let's keep going. That's the idea behind dad. Dad says, listen, we're going to train you. We're going to train you through pain. And you're going to be the better man for it. You're going to be a bigger man for it. Don't refuse this. We've been working long. We've been working hard. It's cost you much already. Now don't throw this away. We've been building a foundation for many years, my son. We've been straightening this arrow. We've been carving. We've been polishing this shaft so that you shoot straight. Don't throw this away. He says, don't forsake the instruction of your mother or the teaching of your mother. The idea here is training, not through so much experience as it is training through counsel. Listen to her words. She's the one who sits you on your lap, who stays up late at night to talk with you, who counsels you and comforts you. Again, there's been pain, but you've been able to learn through others' pain. She means to save you from pain. My son, as you work and walk through life, remember the foundation that we're building into you. These are words, these are truths that we've invested a long time. There's two results that if you do pay this kind of attention, that they'll have a great payoff. Verse 9. If you listen, these will be a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. So we get the picture. A graceful garland for your head. Okay, maybe we don't. Okay. That's just what I want. I want to walk around with a garland on my head. Garland. Christmas? This pine stuff stuck on the top of my... What are we talking about? Picture, if you will, the old Olympics and the wreath, the victor's crown. He says, my son, if you pay attention to what I'm telling you, when you get to the end of life, you will be able to stand tall. Stand proud, stand erect, and will be placed on your head the victor's crown, a wreath. In fact, the idea is a little closer than the end of life. The idea is that you get to wear this while walking through life. You walk through life as one who is a conqueror, one who is a victor, one who wears that laurel wreath on their brow. The other is pendants for your neck, and the idea here is a medal of honor. Again, think Olympics. Not old-time Olympics, but new-time Olympics, where they take that medallion and they hang it over the neck of the winner. And it hangs there in front for everybody to see. I have second place, first place, third place. I have strove and won. And there's an honor that goes with it. And the idea of wearing these as an honor as kind of a two... There's a couple different things going on with this picture. Tremper Longman writes, perhaps it's not pressing the image too far to see these images of wreath and pendant or necklace framing the head, which possesses the instruments of speech and hearing, two important tasks in this wisdom walk. So he takes this the head and he frames it top and bottom with ornaments of gold. It says, listen, son. If you would employ your mouth, your ears, your eyes, your life, your brain in the right way, and adorn it with wisdom, then listen to my words. But the point is that wisdom gained through instruction is itself the adornment. As such, it's put on public display. Waltke writes, this metaphor points to the reality of parading and reciting the teaching out in public. This prominent advertisement of wisdom is for spectators to see, like a wedding band. And it's the best defense against the seductress folly. So he says, if you wear these publicly, it's like putting on a wedding ring and saying, this is who I am. This is who I belong to. This is my direction. This is my goal. Stay away from me because you don't belong to me. I belong to someone else, and it's not you. That's the idea behind these pendants and wreaths that allow him to have both honor and victory as he walks through life. It's an opening statement of purpose. And he says, son, we're having this talk not because I want to have it, but because you need it, and I want you to win when it's all said and done. Don't you love it when somebody takes the time to have that conversation with you? Listen, we need to talk. Okay, this conversation is going to go places neither of us want to go. But I'm not having it for my benefit. I'm having this for your benefit. I love you. And so we need to talk real. And we need to talk deep. And that's what the Father does for the Son at this point. There's a summary of the lesson that he's about to give the Son, verse 10. My Son, listen, here's what I'm trying to tell you. If sinners entice you, if they would woo you away from the path of wisdom, do not consent. Don't follow them. Don't go there. Very simple. You have potential experience in life, my son, in real life as it's to be lived in the real world. The potential experience is this, that sinners will entice you. They're numerous. They're more in number than the redeemed. As Israel has been told from its very beginning, there will only be a remnant who ever walk with God. Even though all have access to wisdom, all have access to revelation, there will be a minority who choose to walk God's ways. Get used to it. But be prepared, because those who do not walk with God will want you to walk with them. So my son, be careful. If sinners entice thee, when sinners entice thee. When sinners entice thee. Because it's not so much a matter of if as a matter of when. When they say, come on, you say no. That's the summary of his lesson. Verse 11, he gives an illustration of this lesson. And he does so in a shocking way. Verse 11, there's this scenario that lays out pretty obvious. Don't you wish life was quite this obvious? Verse 11, if they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without reason. Well, as the Father lays it out for the Son, he's making it pretty blatant. But what he's trying to do is to shock the Son into saying, into realizing, you know what they're doing is this, and you might not even know it. What they're trying to do is, well, let's walk through it just a little bit. There's an invitation. They're going to tell you to come with them. Well, the idea here is folly never stays by itself. It always engages others. It always wants others. Misery loves company. Folly loves company. And they're going to want you to be a part of it. And you're going to be tempted because there's built into every one of us a desire for fellowship. This is a God-given desire. This is a God-given design. But this is a distortion of this God-given design for fellowship. But because it's God-given, it's going to find some sort of resonance in your soul deep. Hey, why did you come with us? Don't you love it when somebody says to you, hey, come with. Why don't you come with? It's like, well, okay. He said, my son, be careful. Because their invitation is going to resonate with something inside of you. There's an intent, verse 12, to murder. Hey, why don't you come with? Or this is still verse 11. Why don't you come in with and let us wait for blood? What? That's not what I'm... why don't you? Again, he's putting it in terms that are very stark, almost shockingly stark. Let's wait to kill somebody. The idea is ambush them, waiting to attack them without warning. The purpose is to annihilate them, to get them out of the way, to take the life of the victim. Let us lie in wait for blood. Ambushing the innocent without reason. And again, the Father is piling up scenario in such a way, he's stacking the cards where he's meant to repulse the Son by this prospect. Dad, they're going to kill somebody. Dad, they're innocent. Dad, it's without cause. Dad, it's without warning. Dad, what do you mean, Dad? I would never do this. Be careful, my son, because real life will take you where you never thought you would go. Probably nobody in your lifetime has ever come up to you with these words and say, hey, why didn't you come with us? Let's go lie in wait for blood. Let's ambush the innocent without cause. Anybody have somebody say that to you ever in your lifetime? This isn't a conversation that happens. And the father isn't putting this as though this were the conversation that's going to... He's crafting a conversation in such a way so that the son will see through what's happening and be repulsed by what's happening. And so he says, understand that you choosing the path of wisdom will be in the minority. That there will be sinners who will entice you. And their enticement will result in destruction of others. And he's going to bring them down to the point where he's going to say it will bring them to destruction of self as well. There's a motive of gain. Verse 13, we shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Precious goods and plunder. These are put in innocent terms. Guess what? We're going to find precious goods. We're going to find them like they're there. Where? Oh, like belonging to the dead person. It's like, oh, boom. Oh, guess what we found? He's starting to unpack some of the craftiness of the situation that unfolds. Put in innocent terms, it's put in desirable terms. We're going to fill our houses. Good things. Plunder. We're going to fill our houses, it says there in verse 13. When you look at the graffiti-strewn wall, you don't necessarily think of people living in houses. You think of people living in back alleys, burnt out, run down, tenements, so on. The idea here is, son, understand that the people that you're going to be walking with and enticed by probably isn't going to be MS-13 or whatever. And he's not necessarily saying, watch out for gangs, guys. He's saying what you need to be careful is these people who act in this way are your friends, your neighbors. Blue collar, white collar, it doesn't matter. They have houses just like you. They have cell phones just like you. They have educations just like you. My son, I'm telling you, their voices will be loud. They will be your peers in everything but your values. And so you can't love what they love. You must love something different, something higher. There's a promise of security in this. He says in verse 14, they're going to tell you to throw in your lot among us. Throw your dice. Cast your die with us. It's the idea of just a small choice. Hey, you've got dice. You can only throw them. Why don't you throw your dice in with us? Not a big deal. We'll take you where we go. You'll be one of us. There's a matter of great chance. Listen, we'll all have one purse. We're going to gain riches, splendor, plunder, good things. This is presented as a low-stakes risk with high-stakes winnings. Listen, all you got to do is throw in your lot with us, and whatever we take, winner takes all, and we're going to share it with you. But remember how this thing started. These people care nothing for others to the point of death. Is there any guarantee that you're going to get any share of their plunder? They're looking out for who? They're looking out for themselves. And the father, as he's pulling back the curtain of reality, which wisdom does, he's saying, son, look at what's going on in this scenario. These are people who look and sound just like you. They've grown up in your neighborhoods. Okay. Understand what they're doing here. They care for nobody. The plunder that they take isn't discovered, isn't found, isn't worked for. It's taken from others. That's the illustration of the lesson. Now he moves to the instruction of the lesson in verses 15 through 19. He says in verse 15, my son, do not walk in the way with them. And what we have here is the initiating of life as a way. It's a metaphor that's going to be developed very much in these first 9 chapters and then carried all through the book of Proverbs. Life as a way. This life as a way is conducted by walking. He says, don't walk in the way with them. The idea of walking means you move down the path. You move forward in the way. We make choices every single day that move us down the path of life. You have choices for, you have choices against, and sometimes we make choices not to choose, which we're going to find out very shortly is a choice. You either choose yes, you choose no, or you choose maybe, but all of those are a choice. All of those will have consequence, he says to his son. Be careful. You are walking a path. You are making choices that are forwarding you. They are making you what you are becoming. So be careful in the choices that you make and don't make your choice with them. These choices are represented by a single stepping of the foot. He says, don't walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, because their feet run to evil. They make haste to shed blood. And what he's doing at this point, he's beginning to unpack for his son the folly of this choice, the folly of this path. It's destructive. They're running to evil, and the idea behind evil has both a moral component and a consequential component. They're running to bad. They're running to destruction. But the destruction that they're running to, my son, isn't only the destruction of others he's going to lay out for them. It's the destruction of themselves. Be careful, because their feet are walking down a path that are securing destruction for themselves. And if you join them on that path, you're going to end in the same place where that path takes them. It destroys them. And if it destroys them, it will destroy you. So my son, be careful. Be careful where you walk. Be careful with whom you walk. Because you will share the fate of all that you share fellowship with. Don't conform your path to theirs, because it has a destiny and you will end where they end. Verse 17, we see not only that folly is destructive, but folly is self-destructive. He says, in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. He uses the same metaphor, the same language that he used up in verse 11. Let's lie in wait for blood. Let's ambush them. Let's swallow up their life. He says, son, what they have no idea. They can't see. A bird can see a net, and it won't go there because it's afraid of the consequences. But these are men like blind birds. They have no idea that as they're flying full force down the path of life, issuing destruction on others, that they are building destruction for themselves. He says what's happening is they are lying in wait for their own blood. They're setting an ambush for their own lives. And son, if you walk with them, you're going to be like them. You're not going to just be like them on the path of life, but you're going to be like them in the destination that that life brings. So be careful, my son. And then we see that justice is preeminent. Verse 19. Such is the way, my son, of everyone who's greedy to gain in an unjust way. To take rather than build. To kill rather than to build up and give life. My son, if this is how you build your life, you will take your own life in the process. Because justice will win. God, the way he's organized the universe, there is consequences. Whatever a man sows, that shall he also Okay, you cannot change the law of nature. God has built wisdom into nature itself. He says, you cannot sow apart from reaping. And whatever you sow, you will reap. You will never reap something that you don't sow. So be careful. This is the conversation between father and son. He says, son, be careful that you don't conform yourself to those who are fitting themselves for destruction. The second danger is the danger of being destroyed. Not by conformity, which says yes to something he shouldn't, but the danger of complacency, which says no to something he should, or worse yet, maybe. And as we work through this part of the process, we're going to see that at stake, he's talking, wisdom is calling out to a young person, the simple, and then he's going to, or she is going to contrast the simple with the most hardened of the fools, called the scoffer. And then she's going to pull back a little bit and say, now this is folly. Don't be foolish by refusing to make a choice for wisdom, because if you choose not to make a choice for wisdom, by default, you're choosing against wisdom. There's only one choice. Either you choose for or you choose against. And if you don't choose for, you automatically choose against. You can't just say maybe, because maybe means no. And he says, son, you can't afford that. That means you've got to choose wisdom when? You've got to choose wisdom now. My son, you're old enough for this. And you've got to understand today that the choices that you make today affect the places where you'll be tomorrow. And by refusing to choose wisdom today, there will be consequences. That's the whole point of where he's going with this. In verse 20 and 21, there's a call. This call is issued to everybody. Again, understand the voice of the Father and the voice of wisdom coincide with one another. They're working together. Verse 20, wisdom cries aloud in the street. In the markets, she raises her voice. At the end of the noisy streets, she's crying out to get your attention. You can't be in here without hearing me. And that's the whole point of what wisdom is doing. She raises her voice on purpose in the noisiest place of the city because nobody is there to listen to her. Everybody is there to conduct life around themselves. This is the street preacher. It's a woman. She's not wearing a sandwich board that says the end of the world is coming. But she is screaming at the top of the voice of saying, the end of your life is coming, and how are you preparing for it? Nobody's there to listen to her, but she's trying to get everybody's attention. You find her, it says, she's crying aloud, she's in the streets. Wisdom is available to anybody. This is the public arena. You find her in the noisy streets, the crowded streets, the markets, the place where life is happening, where exchanges are being made. It says there in verse 21, at the entrance of the city gates. You can't go in or out of the city except wisdom is there, calling to you, wooing you, trying to get your attention, and to keep you from living life unto yourself is the whole point. The whole point of this is you do not have the defense when you come to the end of your life to say, you know what? I didn't know any better. I didn't know any better. You started out not knowing any better. But as you live life, you will not have the defense before God to say, you know what? I just didn't know any better. Because God has built wisdom into life. She's crying in the street. She's trying to get your attention. And as you put yourself in front of her, she's putting herself in front of you. You can't avoid her. She's walking your way. There's a focus in wisdom on some specific few. Verse 22. How long, you simple ones? And the question has the idea of, it's been too long already. I'm urgent. I want you soon. I want you now to make a change. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? She's targeting the simple ones. This is the immature. This is the naive. This is the uncommitted. This is the one who's not made a choice yet for wisdom or against wisdom. They're not choosing. They're waiting. And wisdom is calling out and saying, you don't have time to wait. And then the next one she targets there, verse 22. How long, you simple ones, how long will scoffers delight in their scoffing? How long will fools hate knowledge? She lumps them together with the very worst and the ugliest of what mankind can look like. Simple ones, child, immature one, do you want to be an idiot? She uses as harsh language as she can. Do you want to be stupid and thick and dull? Do you want to be ugly and belligerent and mocking? That's not what you want to be. And if you don't want to be like that, you've got to make a choice. You've got to listen to me as this moves forward. The scoffer represents all who oppose wisdom. The idea for them is there's no hope of change. The fool is that transitional phase between the simple and the scoffer. There's little hope because they continue to choose against wisdom. And so she's calling out to the simple, don't be like them. The time is now to choose for me. And if you don't choose for me, you are choosing against me. It's interesting in verse 22 what's motivating these individuals. How long, O simple ones, will you love your simplicity? How long, scoffers, will you delight in scoffing? How long, fools, will you hate knowledge? You understand that your destiny is a result of your choices. Your choices are a result of your affections. But I don't like broccoli. I'm your mother. Did I ask if you like it? I said, eat it. I'm not concerned whether you like it. But I don't like classical music. I don't like playing the piano. I didn't ask. I don't care. You do it. And eventually, maybe you'll like it. Maybe you won't, but maybe you will. I'm responsible for my tastes because I choose what I learn to like. Do you understand that? I don't like this. Who cares? Learn to like it because you are responsible for your tastes. You are responsible for your affections. And that's what wisdom holds out in front of them at this moment. She gives a blessing, a promised blessing in verse 23. If you turn at my reproof, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. I can give you wisdom. I can give you direction. I can whisper in your ear. I can be your life garment. I can take you down paths when your detour is bigger than you can imagine. I will get you where you need to go. There's a personification of wisdom, which is the wisdom of God, and to reject wisdom is to reject God. There's a reason that it says, I will pour out my spirit on you here. This isn't just wisdom talking. This is God talking. And that's the point of this theological construct of the book of Proverbs. If you do this, I will. Now, verses 24 through 28 is the very heart of this whole thing, and we're losing time quickly, but I want to run through this. Because not only is there a promised blessing, but there is a promised curse. This goes back to Deuteronomy chapter 28. Interesting, in chapter 28 of the book of Deuteronomy, where the covenant is set up with Israel, there's a promised blessing. It's very short. There's a promised curse. It's very long and very detailed. We find the same scenario right here. One verse of promise, blessing. Many verses of promise, curse. Why would you think it would be like that? Because we're probably prone to making the wrong choices, right? And so we need somebody to lay down for us. Listen, there are serious repercussions. There are serious and deadly consequences if you go this route. Look at verse 24. Because I call and you refuse to listen, because I stretch out my hand and no one heeds, because you ignore and don't act upon my counsel, because you wouldn't embrace and take and treasure all my reproof, I will laugh when your calamity comes. I will mock as you have mocked me when terror strikes you. When terror strikes you like a storm, your calamity comes like a whirlwind and chases you down. When distress and anguish come upon you. Oh, then they'll call upon me, but I will not answer. Oh, they'll seek me diligently. They'll labor long and hard and stay awake long into the night to try to find me, but they won't. Verse 29, because they hated knowledge and did not choose a life oriented with an understanding of God as its central component. They did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would have none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. Therefore, they shall eat the fruit of what? Their way. They've been walking away. They've been making their choices. And at the end of the way, they get to eat what they've planted. They get to sleep in the bed that they've made. Use whatever metaphor, but they did it, now they get it. That's what wisdom says. So you have to understand on this path, as I'm calling, as I'm issuing my warning, as I'm giving myself to you, by not saying, yes, wisdom, I need you. You're saying, maybe not now, wisdom. Maybe later, wisdom. That's a good idea, wisdom, but, He says, you must choose wisdom, and you must choose wisdom now. Now. There's an urgency in this whole thing, because this curse is promised. I will give you if you listen. This will happen if you don't. There's a closing statement of blessing that just opens the passage with a promised blessing from the dad. Wisdom closes with a promised blessing. Verse 32, understand this, simple one. The simple are killed by turning away. Do you get that? The simple are killed by turning away. Because they don't turn to, they turn away. That's what kills them. He says, the simple are killed by turning away. The complacency of fools destroys them. Oh, it's so easy to be complacent, isn't it? Life's easy. Why would I change directions now? Do you understand how much it costs to live for Jesus? Do you understand how much it costs to follow God? Do you understand how much it costs to pursue wisdom? This is easy. It's going to be okay. Chill out. It's all right. But it's a counterfeit ease. But her promise then of blessing is this, it's this closing statement. But whoever listens to me will dwell secure. They'll be at ease. They'll be without dread of disaster. It doesn't mean that nothing bad will happen. Psalm 73. How come it seems like all the bad are reaping all the good? It doesn't mean that you're going to gain all the wealth, even though other passages in Proverbs seem to indicate as you follow wisdom, these kind of things generally happen. They're not promises, they're generalizations. But she does say this, the bad that does happen won't destroy you. The detours that when they do come, they won't get you lost. I will walk with you. My grace will not take you where my grace cannot keep you. I will walk this path with you. It's far easier than you think, my friend, for real life to take you where you never thought you'd go. But there's a corollary truth at the very beginning of Proverbs here. And it is this. It's far simpler than you imagine for wisdom to keep you from the real dangers you've always feared. All you have to do is say yes. Yes to wisdom. And by saying yes to wisdom, you're saying yes to God, right? By saying yes to wisdom, you're saying yes to God. My friend, you probably don't want to be like radical in your Christianity. You probably don't want to be like wearing it on your sleeves that, you know, I'm a Christian, but I walk in a real world. He says, you've got a choice to make. Whose disciple are you? What path are you walking? If you're wearing the pendants of Jesus Christ, wear them proudly. Let the world know that you belong to somebody. So that one of the best defenses is a good offense, right? And so if the people know that you're living for God, guess what they're not going to try to get you to do? Walk away from God. They're not going to try to insult you by getting you to walk a path away from God. Or it will happen less often. You see, I just don't want to be so blatant. I want to stay maybe under wraps, undercover. Or maybe I don't have to make those big choices today. Guess what? If you don't make the big choices today, God will confront you with bigger choices tomorrow. And if you keep saying no to the choices that God lays in front of you, someday God will stop giving you those choices to make and let you walk the path that you're comfortable walking. My friend, you cannot afford to say no to wisdom, to say no to God. Because life will take you where you don't want to go. All you have to say is yes as God leads you. Let's pray.